In his new book, Bird Flu, Dr. Mark Siegel says it's good to be prepared for worst-case scenarios, but, he says, fear itself is its own virus and can cause far more damage than influenza. In his previous book, False Alarm, Siegel wrote about the epidemic of fear and how anxieties are often disproportionate to the actual threats we face. Dr. Siegel is a practicing internist and an associate professor at the New York University School of Medicine. How come you seem to be less worried about the spread of bird flu than a lot of other health experts are?
The answer is that I'm not unafraid of avian influenza in general. I think it's a bug well worth being concerned about. My issue is that I'm not making the broad leap to believe that H5N1, which there's several steps that have to occur before this bird flu can put multitudes at risk and millions at risk. First of all, it has to mutate to a form that goes easily human to human, which hasn't occurred. Then if it does go through that mutation, it may in fact mutate out of the form where it's really killing people. We don't know whether those things are going to happen.
If the bird flu did spread, are there things that we could do now, I'm sure there are, that couldn't be done in 1918 during the flu pandemic that killed millions of people?
Absolutely, Terry. You know, in 1918, yes, there were less people than now. Yes, we have more elderly now. Yes, we have travel, as we're constantly being reminded. We travel around the planet at great rates. But what we haven't that we didn't have in 1918, and this is very crucial, we have antibiotics, and 50% of the birth certificates in 1918 said pneumonia on them. Now, I don't know how many of those were bacterial pneumonia, but we can assume a vast number were. We have treatments for heart disease, and heart disease killed a lot of people that had the flu in 1918. We have steroids to treat people in respiratory failure, which they get from flu, which they got in 1918. We have public health announcements. You know, in 1918, people weren't even sure what a virus was, and they huddled together at draft rallies during World War I, and of course the virus was also spread in trenches, and it was spread among very, very poor people. There's not the same concern of lack of public information. Not only that, the government in 1918 was suppressing information. The government was telling people this is nothing to worry about. We have the opposite problem now.
What are some of the worries that your patients have spoken to you about that you think are really unnecessary worries?
One of the reasons I got interested in writing about this bird flu in general is that I was alarmed at how many people are talking about this and not worrying about the things that I'm actually treating them for. I mean, people with heart disease and obesity, people that are smoking, that I'm trying to get quit smoking, are coming in asking if they're going to get bird flu. Can they have Tamiflu? And I say, what about the yearly flu? I mean, the yearly flu kills over 36,000 people every year, and they're not concerned about the yearly flu. It took me a long time to actually get some of my patients to agree to take the flu shot this year because they weren't thinking about the flu. They were thinking about bird flu. And this fear is way out of proportion to the risk. And of course, I tell people not a single bird in the United States has this.
There are antivirals like Tamiflu that are being discussed in connection with dealing with a pandemic if there were to be one. How does Tamiflu work?
Well, Tamiflu is an antiviral drug. It is called a neuraminidase inhibitor. It blocks the spread of viruses, of flu viruses, from one cell to the next, and it is usually effective against all influenza. In this particular bird flu, it has not yet been proven to work. Actually, a review study in one of the major British journals last week pointed out that it has not been proven to work, but it has been proven to work in animals, in mice and in ferrets, and there's every reason to believe that it would be somewhat effective at high doses at this bird flu, but it is not a panacea. There's also no reason for anybody to be taking it right now if they're not exposed to this virus, and the only people that have been shown to be exposed to this virus are bird handlers in countries where the disease is endemic in birds.
So is Tamiflu a cure? Does it stop the progression of the disease once you've had it? Does it prevent you from getting it in the first place?
Tamiflu would work for bird flu presumably the same way it works for yearly flu. It's mainly used within the first 24 to 48 hours after you come down with symptoms. After that, it doesn't tend to work. It decreases the length that you would have the disease by about a day or two and probably decreases the mortality somewhat. It is the only antiviral drug that has been approved for prevention, but I also think that that's led to tremendous overuse of the drug in Asia because everybody that thinks they may be near the flu at all has taken it. Millions and millions of doses of it have been used, and I'm concerned about resistance occurring, as has already occurred with an older flu drug known as amantadine. So we need to actually keep Tamiflu for when we would really need it, both in terms of the yearly flu and in terms of a bird flu pandemic. It's one of the reasons I'm not a fan of personal stockpiles, because I don't know when my patients would take it. I don't like, in general, the idea of patients stockpiling medications. I prefer the idea of keeping the physician in the loop, if possible. Government stockpiles of Tamiflu make some sense, except that there again, you're sending the message that something imminent is about to happen. I'm more in favor of long-term preparation.
We have flu vaccines every year. Some years they're more effective than others. I know you need advanced time to make an effective vaccine, and you need to know what you're inoculating against, what's the strain of flu. Since we have some advance warning that there is this new strain of bird flu, is it possible we would have a vaccine prepared by the time the bird flu jumped to the human species, if it ever does really jump in a major threatening way?
Well, you know, the problem is that we currently make vaccines using a chicken-egg medium where we inoculate eggs against the virus. And as you might imagine, that causes a problem because the virus is an avian flu and it kills eggs. So we need to use millions of eggs and it takes 6 to 9 months. And this process has been around since the 1950s and it really needs to be upgraded using cell culture where we use mammalian cells and we inject them with a genetically engineered virus, which we have the ability to use. We use it for hepatitis B and chickenpox, and we certainly could use it for flu. Without that, there's a too long a lead time. Now, we currently have a bird flu vaccine, but if H5N1 mutates, it's hard to say how effective that vaccine would be. We could produce vast quantities of it in several months, but it may not be that effective. The yearly flu vaccine right now is only usually about 40 to 60% effective against the flu. So we tend to see it as a panacea, but it is really not. It is a useful tool, not a panacea.
The president has called for $2.7 billion to be put toward the manufacture of vaccines. Would that help in an effective way to transfer to this new technology that you're describing?
You know, I think that that's actually a good part of the president's plan. I think $2.7 billion is a very good start towards going over to modern technology using cell culture, genetic technology, or even the newer vaccines that are out there that are in the works that may actually be able to provide a vaccine against all influenza for a 10-year period. That's currently in the works. So I think that's great. But it doesn't address the more fundamental problem, which is we're relying on the vaccine manufacturers, and there's very few of them right now, actually only three. And the problem is that they're afraid of lawsuits. And I think that the solution is more government involvement the way we have in Western Europe, where the government actually takes control of vaccine manufacturer and assures a certain amount per year and distribution. Without that, we're kind of in trouble. These are generic products. They don't have a large profit margin. And we can't really assure a rapid turnaround of vaccine manufacturer, especially in an emergency situation.
You're saying you don't think that there's enough of a profit motive for commercial pharmaceutical companies to invest a lot in the development of new vaccines?
You know, I think that that's been seen by the fact that there used to be 27 flu vaccine manufacturers in the 1970s in the United States, and now there's three. It's partly because it's a generic product. They can't make a lot of profit on it. It's partly because it's very highly regulated, and it's partly because they have liability concerns.
Well, the president has also proposed ending those liability concerns by making them not liable for any side effects that the vaccine may cause.
Well, this may sound counterintuitive, but I'm not really for that idea. I think somebody's got to be liable. I mean, we don't want to make the public be liable. So if the government assumes the liability, that's fine, provided that there's a liability concern. I mean, we can't just say, you know, we can't promote a panic, overreact, vaccinate millions of people, and then say, well, no one's liable. That's actually a concern that occurred during the swine flu fiasco in 1976, where a virus that never actually came caused such a panic that 40 million people were vaccinated over a month and a half time, and over 1,000 cases of ascending paralysis appeared to result.
Why is it so difficult, and I'm glad it is difficult, but why is it so difficult for the flu virus to jump from birds to a form that can infect humans?
Let's clarify that, because there's thousands of bird flu viruses out there, and our yearly flu actually is generally a bird virus, at least all the influenza A viruses are, and that's the current yearly flu, what we're calling the California flu this year. That's an avian A. That's an influenza A. That is a bird virus. So it's not that it's so hard for bird viruses to jump to human. In fact, the pig is a very common vector for that to occur. Pig mixes both human and bird viruses, and you sometimes get your yearly flu that way. But it's a misassumption to assume that you can pick a certain virus and say that's the one that's going to do it. Now, flu viruses mutate a lot. They change a lot, which is one of the reasons it's worth having scientists track this virus. I am concerned about it, but I would take this point to emphasize that there hasn't been enough distinction made between birds getting this virus and people. And, you know, we've had about 160 people, but millions of birds. In fact, I focus my book, an entire chapter called Bird's Eye View, where I look at the veterinarian response. You know, it might be worth considering that the main experts in the world on avian influenza are actually vets, and many of them work for the USDA and are doing big research on this. And I talked to them and interviewed several of them, and I'm absolutely convinced that the biggest attempt has to be made to control this in the bird population. More vaccinating of birds, more international cooperation targeting birds, more killing or culling of birds, but not all birds. I mean, not, you know, you go out and kill every chicken in sight, you know, more scientific approaches to that. And that's where the money really, really should go.
You know how you've talked about how some people you believe are hyping the avian flu because you think that they have an agenda of their own, for instance, that, you know, researchers might hype it because there'll be more research and money if people are more worried about the spread of flu. And here's what I'm thinking. Your thing is that we have an epidemic of fear, that we're too worried about things and that we're worried disproportionately. So like, you have a vested interest in a way of telling us not to worry about bird flu, because your thing is that we worry too much.
That's a very fair question, Terry, and maybe one of the best questions I've ever been asked. But the truth is that I'm not saying we have nothing to worry about. I'm saying that if we want fear to work properly as a warning system, we ought to use it against the things that are directly threatening us. And I think animals know that a lot better than we do. And we could talk about the things that I think are really threats, like obesity, like, you know, the automobile, maybe nuclear weapons. I mean, that's something that can harm us out of proportion to the risk. We need a scale. We need to say how many people can be affected by that thing, and what is the likelihood of it actually happening? That's a simple scale. With bird flu, it's worth looking at seriously because a lot of people can be affected, but the chances of it are small, so you have to factor that in as well. It's not that my vested interest is it promoting that we don't overreact at all. It's that we learn to overreact to certain things and not others.
Mark Siegel, thank you very much for talking with us.
I've greatly enjoyed it. Thank you.
Dr. Mark Siegel is the author of Bird Flu.